morning. This morning I want to talk to you about something that's probably similar to what Gordo preached last Sunday, but I also anticipate it to be quite a bit different. I've been studying personally through the book of Job, and as I've been doing so, I realized that there was a lot about it that I didn't understand. And so I delved into it, and I'd like to share it with you. Maybe there's some of you who, you know, haven't grasped Job for what it is like me when I was studying through it. And so that's sort of what I want to look at this morning to try and figure out what exactly Job is getting at in this book. So let's go ahead and turn over there. Job chapter 1. I'll kind of do a play-by-play, break it down as we go. Hit the highlights, if you will. Job chapter 1, we'll begin in verse 1. Kind of a lengthy reading here, so just bear with me. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless and upright, and one who feared God and shunned evil. And 7 sons and 3 daughters were born to him. Also his possessions were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and a very large household, so that this man was the greatest of all the people of the east. And his sons would go and feast in their houses, each on his appointed day, and would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with him. So it was, when the days of feasting had run their course, that Job would send and sanctify them, and he would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus Job did regularly. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth, and from walking back and forth on it." Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him, around his household, and around all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But now stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has is in your power, only do not lay a hand on his person." So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. So here we have Job, we have our setting, if you will. This is what we start with. We have Job, who is a blameless man, one who fears God, and one whom God has given immense wealth. You know, 7 sons, 3 daughters, all these livestock, servants, all this stuff. And so, then you see this conversation between God and Satan here, where, you know, Satan comes to him, and God says, "Hey, look at Job here. Look at my servant, how good he is." And Satan's like, "Okay, that's fine, but look at all you've given to him. Of course, he's going to have integrity. Of course he's going to do what you say. Look what you've given to him." And so God gives him permission to tempt Job. So let's continue reading verse 13 there. "Now there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And a messenger came to Job and said, 'The oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them, when the Sabaeans raided them and took them away. Indeed, they have killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you.' While he was still speaking, another also came and said, 'The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you.' While he was still speaking, another also came and said, 'The Chaldeans formed 3 bands, raided the camels and took them away, yes, and killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you.' While he was still speaking, another also came and said, 'Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the 4 corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they are dead, and I alone have escaped to tell you.' Then Job arose, tore his robe, and shaved his head, and he fell to the ground in worship. And he said, 'Naked I come from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.' In all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong. So here, it's, you know, we've read this passage 1,000 times, most of us. We know what's going on here. Job has had his possessions and his children taken away from him. But I'd like for you to, for a few minutes, think about what Job has gone through here, really, what he has gone through. You know, he loses his livestock. You know, that's got to hurt in some form or fashion, as much as he had. But then he finds out that his children are dead. His children, some of his closest relationships on this earth, they're gone. And maybe this is something we haven't thought about before either. How many of those servants that he lost did Job have a personal relationship with? You know, we think about, yeah, he lost his children, but what about these servants too? Maybe he had close relationships with them as well. You know, for those of us who have lost loved ones, you know, there's a certain emotional pain. It's not a physical pain. It's like you have this huge rock stuck in your throat. Or when you're worried about a loved one, it's like you have a brick in your chest and it's just holding you down. You know, me and Hannah had conversations in the car, and she said, you know, if this is what hell feels like, I don't want to go. You know, that's something we don't think about. Weeping and gnashing of teeth, it's misery. It's, you know, it's punishment. And Job is going through all of this right now, but he's not done. Let's continue in chapter 2. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth, and from walking back and forth on it." Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil, and he still holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin, yes, all that a man has he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, he is in your hands, but spare his life." So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of the ashes. Then his wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die." But he said to her, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity?" In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. So again here we see, even after all Job has lost, when they have that confrontation, this discussion with God and Satan, again, God goes, "Have you considered my servant Job? You've already done all this stuff, and look, he still has his integrity." So then Satan persuades God to allow him to touch Job's flesh. And, you know, then he, you know, he's struck with the boils. And so he has this emotional pain, and now he also has this physical pain. And I'm sure there are those who've been through much physical, worse physical pain than I have. But, you know, even when we have a cold or something, you know, that pain messes with our heads. It fogs our thinking. We aren't thinking clearly. And then on top of this, Job has lost many of his personal relationships. And he's suffering immense emotional pain as well as immense physical pain. It would be hard to maintain your integrity through this. You know, about Job's wife here, something that my mom had mentioned when I was discussing this topic with her. Not that what Job's wife said was correct by any stretch of the imagination, but I think she looks at Job, her husband, and she sees his suffering, and she just wants him to end it. Give up, Job. What are you still doing here? You know, she's seeing him suffer. She's worried about him, but she goes about it the wrong way. But we see Job still maintains his integrity, and there's something to be said for that. So then we see Job's friends come to, they initially come to comfort him. And though we know how they act to Job, I think their motives were pure, but they were being used as instruments of Satan. Let's look at Job chapter 5. This is Eliphaz speaking here, Job chapter 5. We have Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, and Elihu, who come to comfort Job. Let's read verse 6. For affliction does not come from the dust, nor does trouble spring from the ground. What Eliphaz is saying to Job here, he's saying, you know, bad stuff doesn't just happen. You know, you must have done something wrong here. You must have sinned against God. And, you know, you have Job going back and forth with his friends. They're just constantly pounding him. Job, you've done something wrong. You've done something wrong. You've done something wrong. And Job says, no, I haven't. I have done nothing wrong. God doesn't operate that way. He said earlier, shall we not accept the good with the bad? He knows that God doesn't operate that way. And yet his friends seem confused on this matter. Let's look at Job chapter 27. Job chapter 27. And Eliphaz isn't the only one. We have his other two friends who go back and forth. And that's why the book is so long, is because it goes back and forth between discourses. But Job chapter 27, we'll start in verse 1. Moreover, Job continued his discourse and said, as God lives, who has taken away my justice, and the Almighty, who has made my soul bitter, as long as my breath is in me, and the breath of God in my nostrils, my lips will not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit. Far be it from me that I should say you are right. Till I die, I will not put away my integrity from me. My righteousness I hold fast, and will not let it go. My heart shall not reproach me as long as I live. This isn't the only place where Job defends himself, but you see that Job knows that he hasn't done anything wrong. But you do see that Job is beginning to question why God has done this to him. You know, it would be very easy. Think about it again. He's going through immense emotional pain, immense physical pain. And then on top of that, he has these tools of Satan, his friends, sitting there with him, you know, one-on-one. It's like watching a tennis game. You throw it back at him, he throws it back at him, just constantly being pounded. And yet he maintains his integrity. Let's skip ahead to chapter 31, beginning in verse 1. We see God beginning to question God's justice. I have made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a young woman? For what is the allotment of God from above, and the inheritance of the Almighty from on high? Is it not destruction for the wicked, and disaster for the workers of iniquity? Does he not see my ways and count all my steps? If I have walked with falsehood, or if my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed on honest scales, that God may know my integrity. So he's beginning to say, hey, look, God, I haven't done anything. Why are you doing this to me? He begins to question it. And we know, if we keep on reading, that Job demands an audience with God, you know, to present his case, saying, why are you doing this to me? Please stop this. He demands an audience with God. He forgets his place. Then, of course, Elihu steps in and, you know, chastens Job for his comments and chastens his friends, Bildad, Zophar, and Eliphaz, for their comments, the youngest one of them. And then, of course, we see God give his answer. Well, not an answer. He does have the audience with God, but God doesn't tell him what Job wants to hear. Basically, we won't read it, but we see God demonstrate his power and his all-knowingness. Now, who can you draw out the Leviathan with a hook? He's saying, can you do this? I made this creature, and you can't even capture him. I made this, so what more could I do to you? I am more powerful than you. I know what's going on. And you don't get to demand an audience from me. So then we see Job humble himself. Let's read chapter 42, starting verse 1. Then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that you can do everything, and that no purpose of yours can be withheld from you. You asked, who is this who hides counsel with knowledge? Therefore I have uttered what I did not understand. Things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. Listen, please, and let me speak. You said, I will question you, and you shall answer me. I have heard of you by the hearing of my ear, but now my eye sees you. Therefore, I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. So we see, even through all of the initial loss of his loved ones, the pain that he endured emotionally, that rock in his throat that he had when he lost his children, then the physical pain when he had the boils that Satan caused him, he maintained his integrity, but through it all, he begins to lose it, and he questions God. And then here he repents. He makes the right decision afterwards. But we see he proves Satan right here. Satan was right about Job in this instance. Job gave up on his integrity just for a little bit. And that's all it took. Let's look at Matthew chapter 5. It's a very interesting book, the book of Job. We have this commentary on basically man's suffering and why man suffers, and you know, why wicked men prosper while good men suffer. And we see that Job's friends were confused about this and then even confused Job in the process. You know, we have that the preacher Joel Osteen preaching the health and wealth gospel that, you know, if you do good things, God will reward you. And if you are a sinner, God will punish you. But Jesus says something quite the opposite here. Matthew chapter 5, verse 45. That you may be sons of God, or that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. As if Job weren't enough evidence for us, here we have Jesus telling us that just because you're suffering doesn't mean that you have done something wrong, and just because you prosper doesn't mean you've done something right. Bad things happen to both sides. Good things happen to both sides. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. You know, there's a saying that my mom pulled out, you know, with all this that we've gone through with my dad. I don't know where she heard it, but I kind of like it. You know, if you're going through immense trial or suffering, you know, it's kind of a compliment from God, isn't it? Because he's saying, I know you can overcome this. You are good for this. You can do this. You know, even if we don't know that we can do it, well, God knows that we can overcome this. Verse 13. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. You know, this verse basically is telling us, you know, we're all different, and God is going to custom make your temptations just for you. He's going to custom make your trials just for you. You know, can we all handle what Job handled? I don't know. But we're all different people. And I suggest to you that those who are babes in Christ cannot handle something like what Job went through. Let's look at Hebrews chapter 5. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 12 beginning. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the first principles of the oracles of God, and you have come to need milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But solid food belongs to those who are of full age, that is, those who, by reason of use, have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. Do you think that these babes that the writer of Hebrews is talking to here, do you think they would be able to handle what Job went through? Probably not. They need spiritual milk. I dare say that they would not be able to handle the temptations that Job handled. Is that to say that they won't have temptations? No. But they'll have a different kind that fits them. Suffering that will fit them. Then one final passage, Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8. It's the parable of the sower. It's probably very familiar to all of us. Verse 7. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up with it and choked it. You know, we have these thorns, our suffering, our temptations, and God won't allow those to choke us out without our permission. It's up to us. He's not going to give us more than what we can bear. And so I hope this, it's probably short, but I hope this has been beneficial to you as it was to me. I think because of how Job is written. It's written in a sort of poetic language. It's not the way that we talk. They draw things out, it goes back and forth. It's a long book, and you have to sift through it all to see what it's getting at. But it's really a beautiful commentary on man's suffering and his integrity towards God. So if you're here and you're subject to the call of the gospel, please come forward while we stand and while we sing.